stand up to the punks. Stand up to the bullies of the stump liquor bunch. And explain to the American people why the Republican Party is toxic for America's future. Alan Grayson is living proof that there is a much stronger liberal, some say progressive, like Guy James, I prefer, liberal movement in America than most people understand. I gotta scratch around and find $5 to send to Alan and find $5 to send to Dennis. Because those two have more integrity in their toenail clippings than most of the entire rest of the House and Senate combined. And they deserve to come back. Oh, there are others. You know, this is an election day, right? Big doings, I suppose, in Virginia. And of course, the big teabagger election in New York's 23rd. And then there's California's 10th, which, for all the attention that's been paid to New York's 23rd, probably is a little bit better bellwether than the New York race. Because you see, all the noise is being made about the New York 23rd race, but the fact of the matter is, that district has not gone to anything but a Republican since the Grant administration, okay? So tonight, when you turn on your TV boxes and the talking head in the flickering blue light tells you that it was a monumental day and a return to American family values for the Republican Party today as the in New York's 23rd district and a resounding victory. You can just look at the talking head in the flickering blue light and say, screw you! That district's been repig-licking since the Grant administration. You know, sometimes we use that as a joke. Oh, well, you know, that's been that way since the Grant administration. Yeah, yuck, 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 yuck. I'll be here all week. Try the beef. Try the veal. Crowball. But this, in this case, it's true. This big much ado about nothing, this tempest in a teapot in New York's 23rd, has been a Republican district since the Grant administration, at least since the Roosevelt administration. And I don't mean Franklin. I mean Theodore Roosevelt, you know, pince-nez glasses and bully for you. Yeah, that Roosevelt. But it has been interesting in New York today. The police had to be called to at least a couple of polling sites in New York's 23rd district today. Police were called to at least two polling sites in St. Lawrence County due to what is referred to as overzealous electioneering, otherwise known as voter intimidation, by the teabaggers. We've gotten reports that people are standing there covered with Hoffman stickers and yelling anti-choice stuff at voters. Baby killer! This is from over at Political Carnival, thepoliticalcarnival.blogspot.com. As is noted, the writer got a laugh. I can't wait till the internet grows up and we use names. Got a laugh writes, I called over to the St. Lawrence Board of Elections and got GOP Elections Commissioner Debbie Poller on the line. She confirmed that the police had indeed been called, but she downplayed the incident, saying it's a routine procedure here in the county. We had electioneering within the 100-foot polling marker. It's my understanding they were asked to leave and wouldn't leave. Hello? Hello? When they ask you to leave and you won't leave and you're violating state law? Hell, that's getting pretty close to civil rights violations last I checked. As Gotta Laugh writes, this from the zealots who are adamantly against government intrusion. I guess harassment is acceptable and voter intimidation is dandy, but only if you're a tea-tantrumer. Nah, I'm sorry. They're still teabaggers. Power to the people, Gotta Laugh says, unless they want to vote. That's how they behave. That's how violent, virulent, right-wing bastards behave. See, they've probably never voted before, and they don't understand that most states, most jurisdictions, have laws against electioneering on election day within a certain number of feet of a voting precinct or a polling place. You got to be kind of careful with that sort of stuff. And no, you can't pull, as has been done in West Virginia, you can't pull up to the polling place and pass out a half a pint of Four Roses on the way in, with a copy of the local county machine's slate stuck to the side of it. Now you just go in and you vote this, and here's your half pint of Four Roses. I don't know how it is in other states, but the truth of the matter is, here in West Virginia, it is the law to this day that you can't buy a bottle of hooch on election day because of the fact that, you know, cars with their trunks loaded with cases of half pints of Four Roses or Kesslers or whatever the hell used to traverse the county. Pick folks up, give them their slate, give them their pint or half pint. Republicans gave out half pints. The Democrats gave out pints. You know, that's us. Honestly, most of West Virginia's political past is so dirty that the people who practiced it had to be screwed into the dirt when they died. They were so crooked. But really, you can't. I don't know if it's still like that in other states, but you can't buy a bottle of liquor on election day. And I would submit to you that while I don't know if it's the law in New York State, it probably ought to be now that the teabaggers have entered the fray. Because these people are absolutely insane sober. You don't need them liquored up. These people were told by polling place officials to go away, that they were violating the law, and they said, screw you, we're Merkins, and we're going to stand right here with our teabagger stickers on, and we're going to yell things at the baby killers when they go in to vote. Wow. So that's New York's 23rd, and I haven't seen the results yet. I imagine the polls haven't even closed there yet. But over in California, way over on the other side of the country, the 10th district of California is going to become what is referred to as a progressive district or a liberal district today. Never mind the fact that the teabagger will probably win in New York. That doesn't indicate anything because they've been electing lunatic Republicans for over 100 years. But California's 10th. California's 10th. Well, that's going to be John Garamendi. John Garamendi is one of the biggest progressives, leading progressives in California. What's more, he is and has been for a long time an advocate of universal single-payer health care. He will be replacing Ellen Tauscher Smith. T-A-U-S-C-H-E-R. And she was one of those new Democrats, you know, pro-business, Republican-like type. Yeah. And she didn't want anything to do with anything liberal or anything progressive. And she and the people who supported her made a big to-do out of explaining it. California's 10th district is a moderate district, and only moderates can win there. Oh, dear, pass me the Chablis and Brie. On the other hand, John Garamendi, as opposed to what Ellen Tauscher did in Tauscher, running away from liberal ideas, fully embraces them. And he's going to win today. As pointed out by David Dayan at Fire Dog Lake, Robert Cruikshank has written the following. California 10 becomes a left-wing district. John Garamendi, one of the most progressive California politicians we have, and a true leader on a broad range of issues, is going to get elected to Congress today. While the right thinks they have an upset potential here, it's simply not going to happen. Garamendi has a great GoTV operation, get out the vote, GOTV, and widespread support in the district. And whereas the right will spin whatever Harmer's vote total turns out to be as some sort of victory, the real story here is that California 10, which as recently as 1996 was a red district before Ellen Tauscher, you see, they had him a re-pig licking in office, has now become a solidly progressive district. We always said the 10th could do better than Ellen Tauscher. Today, John Garamendi is going to prove it. But it will, of course, be all about New York's 23rd today. And there will be some sort of ex post facto justification for the thuggish behavior of the teabaggers at the polling places, because what you are witnessing right now is a desperate attempt to appear to be relevant on the part of the Republican Party. It is also, I'm reminded by our pal Marty in California, it's also Guy Fawkes Day in 2 days. Do you have your fireworks ready? So, Marty also reminds me that it has been John Garamendi who has at least provided a questionable check on Der Gruppenführer in California, who will not be Bach. So, you know, pay attention to the for-profit media this evening and see which race gets bigger coverage. New York's 23rd, which by any metric whatsoever, it would have been expected to go some form of Republican or another, or California's 10th, which has made a decided shift toward, not to, but toward, I believe that would be the ablative of place to which in Latin. Jesus, where'd that come from? But has made a shift toward the light, toward goodness, toward decency, and toward liberalism with the election of John Garamendi. And that is the sea change. Yeah, California's 10th is in a California kind of way near San Francisco. But it's not like, you know, it's downtown San Francisco. And, of course, the country has been taught and trained and mesmerized and hoodooed by the for-profit media thing. Well, you know, I'm California, and a bunch of granola eating hippies. When, in fact, it's anything but. But watch, just pay attention to the spin machine. Pay attention to how many times this evening, not while you're watching, not while you're listening to the program, mind you. You will pay attention to me. But later on, as you follow the for-profit media coverage, see how many times you catch them, in essence, reading faxes from the teabagger crowd. I fully expect Glenn Beck to have an on-air money shot, plumb straight up orgasm over this sometime tomorrow evening. If they don't have him plugged back in for election night primetime coverage on Fox. Don't you? Because they're going to, we're going to rock the world. We're shaking up America. No, you're not. You just want a seat that's been repig-licking since Ulysses S. Grant was leading the single most corrupt version of the federal government that existed up until the Coolidge administration, or the Harding administration, and then the Coolidge administration, which was at the time the single most corrupt iteration of the U.S. government, until the Nixon administration, which, until the arrival of the Reagan administration, was the most corrupt iteration of the federal government, and remained so until the arrival of the George W. Dim Leader Bush administration, which at this point in time stands at that pinnacle of filth and corruption, like a stinking pile of poo shrouding the torch of Lady Liberty in New York Harbor. How about that? Grant administration, Harding, Coolidge, Nixon, Reagan, and George W. Bush. Son of a gun! Not a Democrat in there! And as filthy, each and every one of them, as the day is long. You know, that's what it is. It is an ongoing competition among the Republican Party to see how much of our national treasure, how much of our national blood they can sacrifice on the altar of Holy Prophet, P-R-O-F-I-T, and how much more they can screw the American people. Yeah, back to the school. Yeah, thank you, Marty. Back to the school of the Bene Gesserit for you, Bob. Your attempt at the voice wasn't quite there. Well, I wasn't using the full voice. Otherwise, you would all be writhing on the floor by now. I try to control. I try to exercise discretion over my powers. And I've never brought the Gam Jabbar out and tested it on Ferg. I promise. But that's where we find ourselves this evening. A year away from election night 2010. And we haven't a clue what that year holds in store. If I was to get out my tattered old robe with the sun, moon, and stars on it and the frayed cuffs, and the sleeve spring loaded with aces, and my magic eight ball with the cracked window that for some reason or another constantly says, answer hazy, ask again later. If I was to do that, however, I would say that this is not going, the next 12 months between now and election night 2010, and I'm not trying to bring anybody down. I know. Everybody was having a great day, and like Reverbo always says, you know, turn Bob on and just want to go and find a bridge. But don't look for this to be an inspiring year. Don't look for bold political stances and bold, unless you're talking about the real heroes of American liberal politics who, frankly, don't give a damn what some benighted, ignorant, sold-out, hoard-up, right-wing, gas-bag, brain-dead thug thinks. Unless it's Alan Grayson or Dennis Kucinich, don't look for a lot of boldness. I believe it is Caesar who is credited with saying fortune favors the bold. And I think he's also credited with saying, "Oh, you brute!" And in many places, fortune does favor the bold. But one of those places where fortune does not favor the bold is in American politics. Not even a little bit. Because our political structure is such that the people seeking office have been repeatedly warned away from doing anything that might be deemed brave or bold, gutsy, because they live in our side lives in constant fear of the other side. Otherwise, why would we be talking about having to have 60 members of the United States Senate in order to stop the deaths of 45,000 Americans a year? I would think you should be able to stop the needless deaths of 45,000 people a year on nothing more than a simple majority. But no, the Republican Party says, "No, you're going to have to have 60 votes before you can. But otherwise, we're going to keep killing them 60,000." Speaking of Harry Reid, this coming along via our blogger Texas Betsy from over at Raw Story. U.S. Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid seems to have picked a strange day to hint that the all-important health care bill might be delayed.
What?
The bad news for Democrats comes on Election Day as Republicans bank on potentially winning three key races in Virginia, New Jersey, and New York. Meanwhile, the pushback will undoubtedly have an effect on the 2010 elections. According to Bloomberg News, U.S. Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid wouldn't commit to passing an overhaul of the U.S. healthcare system this year, saying the chamber will take the time it needs to produce quality legislation.
We're not going to be bound by any timelines.
Reid told reporters in Washington today after a closed-door meeting of all Senate Democrats. Really, Harry? Was it just the Senate Democrats? Surely to God you let Bernie Sanders in there. Oh, wait. I'll bet you let Joe Lieberman in there too, didn't you, Harry? Like I said, don't be getting all busted up waiting for bold strides forward by most of America's political representatives. I wouldn't call Harry Reid leadership if it was the last time I got to use it on planet Earth. No. Because at the same time, and just saying, mind you, this from over at the Hill by Alexander Bolton. Senator Joe Lieberman has reached a private understanding with Majority Leader Harry Reid that he will not block a final vote on health care reform, according to two sources briefed on the matter. The unpredictable Democrat turned independent, oh please, last week publicly stated he would join Republicans in filibustering the Democratic legislation after Reid announced it, yada, 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 you know the story. Sources said... God, sources said. Sources said Reid's staff is telling liberal interest groups that Lieberman has assured Reid he will vote with Democrats in the necessary procedural vote to end debate. Perhaps with intentions to change the bill. One source said, Lieberman keeps assuring Reid that he's okay, but he's one of those characters you never know with Joe. In other words, he's a liar! You cannot trust Joe Lieberman. Joe Lieberman would run over his own sainted grandmother if he thought that there was some political capital to be had out of it. He's pitiful in his own loathsome way, Joe Lieberman is. Maybe he's talking tough to get the public option watered down, or he's trying to get some stuff for himself on other topics or on other sections of the legislation, the source added. He's basically trying to be a senator. Notice, trying to be, because God knows he's not one. But see, that's the problem. Something stinks here, because this is a story out of the Hill, right? Senator Lieberman has made it clear he will vote for the motion to proceed to the health care bill, but will oppose cloture on a final bill if it contains a public option because he believes that it would be worse for our national debt problem, said Lieberman aide Marshall Whitman. Well, how about that? That source has a name, and it's a Lieberman aide named Marshall Whitman, not sources say. In other words, Joe Lieberman continues to insist that he will put the shiv between America's ribs. Joe Lieberman likes those 45,000 dead Americans every year. He thinks it's okay. Yeah, that whole thing said Lieberman aide Marshall Whitman. He will oppose cloture on a final bill if it contains a public option because he believes it would worsen our national debt problem. The next line is just choice. A spokesman for Reid declined to comment. Well, howdy do. Maybe a spokesman for Reid declined to comment because the fact of the matter is, Harry Reid isn't sure now whether he's got the starch to do what needs done for the American people now that the political season is officially upon us. How long ago did I say that if we don't have the Employee Free Choice Act, if we don't have health care, if we don't have the things we need by December the 31st, 2009, sunshine, you ain't gonna get them! Because from here on out, it's nothing but poll numbers and horse races and the typical descent into the muck and goo and nastiness that is an American political campaign season. That seems endless, that begins anew as soon as the last one ends. There was a tiny window of opportunity open. That window, brothers and sisters, friends and neighbors, that window is now closed. Yeah, the Frenchman has mounted to the castle rampart walls and said, "Go away, or I shall taunt you a second time." And of course, someone looks at Harry Reid and says, "Shut up and go and change your armor," because he's wet himself again in fear. I am not the liberal answer man. I'm fresh out of answers and donuts both. But I know that on this night, the third day of November 2009, as we kick off the political season for the 2010 midterm elections, we're in trouble. We are, sure enough, in trouble.
I don't mean political trouble. I mean every day working at work, you know, work a day, budget balancing, carrying the hummingbird tongue canape eating class on our backs trouble. All of America is in trouble as of today, because the Democratic majority that we put in the House of Representatives to do very specific things. Oh, look, we're still in Afghanistan. Oh, look, we're still in Iraq. Oh, look, we're still torturing. Oh, look, we're still doing domestic spying. Oh, look, habeas corpus is still in a state of flux. Oh, look, we still don't have health care. Oh, look, we still don't. You see. Yeah. So, that's where we stand. And I am more than a little bit nervous where we stand. You? You got, an opinion on this? It's not like I have to tell you that your opinion is not only welcome, but valued here. I should hope you know that by now. But you are welcome to chime in as you wish. 877-443-2366, 877. The numeral 4. Head on. On your nickel, if you've got some sort of unlimited long-distance dialing program and it won't cost you anything to do it, dial us direct. Save us a nickel or a buck. 304-658-3333. Email rolls merrily in to Bob Kincaid, B-O-B-K-I-N-C-A-I-D, @gmail.com. And there's a, you know, there's a ton of stuff to look at this evening. I said we're in trouble. We're already in trouble. And what I mean by that? Headline. Bankruptcy filings to match divorce filings in 2009, 1.5 million. 35.8 million Americans on food stamps, 11% of the population, and the five indicators of the misery index. This is from over at MyBudget 360. Don't know what their political philosophy is. It is a sobering fact, they write, that in 2009 there will be as many people filing for bankruptcy as those filing for divorce. We are on track to seeing an average of nearly 5,900 bankruptcy filings a day. A day! 2009. Can you imagine that? I know sometimes it's hard to get your head around the massive scope of the size of this country. I mean, there's a lot of country here, right? But I see headlines like this, and I'm reminded of Sister Kate out on the road, maybe in the desert, maybe in the mountains, not sure. When she says, you know, you got to pull back and you got to look inward and you got to ask, you know, where's my rice? Where's my beans? Where are my loved ones? Do I have clean drinking water? Can I get through the winter? $5,900 cases of individual domestic financial collapses per day in the United States in 2009. Anybody want to run the quick math for me? I don't want to take the time to start, accessories, calculator, and then the clackety-clackety noise. $5,900 divided by 24. And that yields the number of bankruptcies per hour in the United States. divide that by 60 and you get the number of bankruptcies per minute. And work it down to bankruptcies per second. And that many bankruptcies happen in the United States. Whatever that number is. But that's one of the problems with the human mind and our ability or lack thereof to comprehend issues of scale. That's the problem. That's the problem. That's the problem. Because that is nothing. It certainly sounds like nothing. Oh, look, I'm snapping my... Oh, Bob Snow, he's got rhythm, baby! I've been doing that since I was 3 or 4 years old. But in that instant, are writ volumes of human misery. In that instant are writ volumes of fear and uncertainty. And yes, shame. Because insofar as many of us were raised in the middle class or the lower middle class or the upper lower class, the one thing we were always all taught was that to not be straight up on your debt was as great an indicator of your lack of civic worth as anything else out there. Bankruptcy was as dirty a word in this country at one point in time as divorce. In the working class, mind you. In the working class. Among our betters, they understand that bankruptcy and divorce exist as a tool for them to use, and to use at will. The upper class, for the most part, our betters in this country, why, they change spouses like we change socks. And they go bankrupt at the drop of a hat. I say, old man, I see you filed bankruptcy last week. Yeah, I did, but I got to keep the mansion and, I had a little bit of money, extra some money squirreled away at the bankruptcy court's never going to find out about. Ha! Why, my good man, that's bankruptcy fraud! I know. Bully for you, old boy! Bully! It's their tools. It's our shame. Tears. Shouted arguments, the ends of marriages that have weathered illness, tragedy, death, gone. Times. Not a year, a day. Multiply 1.5 million. We think of that grim visit that comes by from some member of the military, the knock on the door that every military family dreads, and we know means only one thing, and it ain't good. That some daughter, father, sister, brother, son, is no more and has had their life wasted on a battlefield in far Afghanistan or Iraq. And we know that the reverberations of that will echo down the decades in that shattered family. I know that for a fact, because I still think about the uncle I never met, that my father, the brother that my father loved so dearly, the cousin that I never met, that my mother loved so dearly, and they are remembered in their loss, our loss. But it's the same sort of thing when we talk about a bankruptcy. And in many ways, it's a little, perhaps I've been told that it's a little bit like a trip to the dentist, but because getting there is a lot more terrifying than being there. But before you get to the bankruptcy, you get to that point where it seems like there is absolutely no way out, that there is no relief, that nothing is ever going to get any better, and that you are screwed forever, and you know, panic attacks begin as soon as whenever you see the phone ring or it shows up unknown caller, because you know that it's going to be another damn debt collector, another mercenary, predatory bill collector, and that's going to shoot your day straight to hell, because it's going to remind you once again that as a member of the working class, you have failed. That you are somehow a failure. And the bankruptcy process itself is designed to humiliate, to remind working class folks that they're not doing right by their betters. They have to go to credit counseling and answer questions about how they'll not be quite such free spenders next time. When in fact, as is often the case, what sent them into bankruptcy had nothing to do with living large, but rather instead had to do with simply trying to continue to live, because our for-profit, avarice-driven medical system is driving the American people into bankruptcy like herds of so many bison run off a cliff. $5,900 per day. This article notes, while some people use the stock market as their barometer of economic recovery, there are a few other misery indicators that show things are still bad for millions of Americans and counter the recovery talks. If you want to track a broader recovery, I would recommend people examine the five indicators of the misery index: food stamps, bankruptcies, long-term unemployed, foreclosures, and credit card defaults are probably your best gauges to the real economic recovery. The problem we currently face, says this article from MyBudget 360, is even after the global economy was brought to its knees by the current Wall Street banking structure, things still haven't changed at the core of their mission. The same banks are back taking inordinate amounts of risk. Oh, look, they're doing it again, Ma. With the now explicit backing of the U.S. taxpayer. It is no surprise, then, that our U.S. dollar has been pummeled by the policies of the Federal Reserve and U.S. Treasury. You know, this last trip to D.C., I drove by the Federal Reserve building. I think it's down on Constitution Avenue. And you're toddling along, and of course, you know, I'm a tourist, and when you're a tourist, be a tourist. And so I'm just trying to keep the vehicle on the road and not ram the cabbie in front of me and whatever. But I look over and I see Federal Reserve, and I went, son of a, because all I could imagine was a bunch of hooded, black-robed, the wizards of evil intent in there, making sure that you and I and the majority of this country, by God, remain slaves. Muttering weird economic phrases over a frothing, boiling cauldron. But yeah, that misery index that they refer to here, 35.8 million people are now on food stamps. 11% of our entire population is now on food stamps. In 2006, we expended $30.6 billion on food stamps. In 2007, $30.3 billion. In 2008, $34.6 billion. And remember, how many? 35.8 million people in this country on food stamps, 11% of the population? Let's remember what that means. That means they're getting a little better than $3 per person per day for food. You can shoot your allotment on a bunch of bananas, and then it's bananas for the next couple of days, and you gotta pray that they don't rot too quick. You want steak? You ain't having steak. You ain't having hamburger. You might be able to afford a can of soup that's got some maybe downer cow beef in it that couldn't even walk and had to be picked up with a bulldozer, with a front end loader blade or a forklift and carried to its slaughter. But is legal to sell to you, schmuck, because the beef industry has bought themselves a handful of congressmen. And then the food prep industry, well, you know, each can is cooked to a minimum of at least 190 degrees Fahrenheit, and it's held there long enough to kill anything that might make you sick. But even when they say something like that, you know, they're admitting that there's shit that makes you sick inside their food. To wit. E. coli kills two and sickens many, focuses on beef. This from the New York Times. Two people, one from New Hampshire and another from upstate New York, have died after eating ground beef that may be responsible for an E. coli outbreak linked to illness in more than two dozen people. The suspect beef was produced by a company in western New York State, Fairbank Farms, which issued a voluntary recall Saturday for 545,699 pounds of ground beef products. How many cattle in that? The products in question are ground beef or packaged beef patties that were made from September the 14th to September the 16th and distributed mostly in the Northeast. All are stamped EST 492, either within the Department of Agriculture's mark of inspection or near the nutrition facts. Contains protein, 100% of the USRDA, poo. Oh, more than enough, you know. The products went to retailers in eight states, Connecticut, Maryland, Massachusetts, New Jersey, New York, North Carolina, Pennsylvania, and Virginia. The stores receiving them included Trader Joe's, Giant, Price Chopper, Wild Harvest, and Shaw's. Fairbanks Farms has themselves a paid spokeswoman. Her name is Agnes Schaefer. She's in Asheville, New York, and she said, she noted, well, you know, there haven't been any tests that have proved conclusively that it's our beef that's full of poo and poisoning people, okay? She also said all the recalled products were 23 to 32 days past their sell-by dates as of Monday, so none should still be on grocery store shelves. No, that means it's in people's freezers and refrigerators and bellies. Beth Daly is an epidemiologist with the New Hampshire Department of Health and Human Services, and she got what I just got. She said, you know, we're more concerned that people have this product in their freezer and might still be eating it. And remember, E. coli 157H7 is a bacterium which contaminates meat products when they come in contact with feces. Scott, Linda, I know, dinner, sorry. It can cause mild intestinal discomfort, otherwise known as the dribbling. And it can also cause death. The New Hampshire resident who died of it contracted hemolytic uremic syndrome. It attacks one's red blood cells and then causes the kidneys to quit. Thorough cooking, we are reminded by the New York Times again, can kill E. coli 0157H7. But they also remind us that E. coli 0157H7 is dangerous even in microscopic doses and can be spread from utensils or cooking surfaces to other foods. That's called cross-contamination. I guess this is our anti-food porn segment of the night. And then there's an organization out there called Safe Tables Our Priority. Isn't that cute, S-T-O-P? Safe Tables Our Priority. Their executive director is Donna Rosenbaum. And she said that the Fairbank Farms recall and a smaller recall back on October 26th in Massachusetts by Crocetti's Oakdale Packing Company, Inc., showed that the nation's food inspection system needed reform. Well, sure it does! It probably needs a rebuild from the ground up. Because you must remember that every time a Republican gets into office, they start dismantling the stuff that you and I need for our continued survival in the working class. But Donna Rosenbaum did make a good point. To this day, she noted, contamination problems are not found by any checks on the products by companies. The companies don't find this! Because they don't want to find it. Because they'd rather roll the dice and say, "Yeah, so what if a toddler in, what if a toddler in New Hampshire dies? We'll probably get sued, we'll pay a settlement, but overall, the corporate bottom line's looking good, and there'll be lots of profits." Now, Ms. Rosenbaum said, contamination problems are not found by any checks on the products by companies. They're found when people get sick, and that is a failure in the system. Ms. Rosenbaum, yoo-hoo, Ms. Rosenbaum, over here. No. That's not a failure in the system, if by system you're talking about our inspection system. That is a failure of corporatism. Because the present model at work in this country does not mandate that corporations do anything but make a profit. They don't have to be humane, they don't have to be safe. All they have to do is generate profit. New York Times notes that Saturday's recall was a large one. 270 tons of beef. The Agriculture Department said that last year's median beef recall, who knew they maintained a number? The median beef recall last year was 7,733 pounds. That's about, what, 3.5 cattle? 270 tons. And where did the cattle come from? The cattle most likely came from a CAFO. A corporate animal feed operation? No, contained animal feed operation. No, it's corporate. That's the one where the cattle stand up to what passes for knees on a cow in their own... And they're sick, and they're pumped full of antibiotics, and they're pumped full of hormones, and they eat corn that cattle aren't meant to eat because they're grass-eating animals. And somewhere along the way, when you take old Bossy and you whatever they do to make them shuffle off this mortal coil so that they can go be my pot roast, sometimes they fall down in some of the, you know... And you just can't expect that all those people working in those slaughter lines where the dead cattle carcasses whiz by like cars on a freeway, literally. And the working people who are usually immigrants, sometimes documented, sometimes not, occasionally represented by a union, often as not, wield razor sharp knives You know what? Some of the poo's going to get through. That is the system. That is the system that is failing. The reason we have problems in the inspection system, which is a separate system altogether, is because it has been deliberately crippled. It was kneecapped by the Bush administration. And it was kneecapped by the Reagan administration. That's what Republican administrations do, is they kneecap regulations because, you know, it just regulations are not good for this country. Regulations, they put too many restraints on our business, and they interfere with our glorious capitalism.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what it is at FDA. Well, I live in Appalachia. I know what 8 years of kneecapping the Environmental Protection Agency did here. I know about burned up kidneys and the absence of gallbladders and teeth that dissolve in the head. Cancers that occur far outside their predictive norms. Oh, hell yeah. Three-eyed fish, fish with crooked spines. Yeah. We know what happens. Oh, and by the way, just because I know you'll get a giggle out of this, one of the little lick spittles to Don Blankenship penned an op-ed that was published in the Charleston Gazette recently, in which he referred to a bunch of limp-wristed greeniacs. See, that's how the corporate profit worshippers, the avarice-driven corporatists, refer to people who dare to stand up and speak out again. They're a bunch of limp-wristed greeniacs. Really? Limp-wristed? Were there again in 2009? These people can't even mount an argument against our sanity, our sane policy ideas. Our legitimate concerns for the well-being of all West Virginians, in this instance, or Appalachian people, without busting out and getting all sixth grade and calling us a bunch of queers? Limp-wristed greeniacs. Yeah. No kidding. So, wow, where did that hour go? And for that matter, where the heck are you? I would expect the phone to have rung a couple of times by now. Or maybe you're just used to me sort of running off at the mouth for the first hour of the program now, and you hold up rather than, oh, I don't want to sit there on hold. Don't know. But you are more than welcome to participate in the program. This is America's listener-supported liberal voice. Up next, on the way, the Green News Report from Brad Friedman and Desi Doyen. It is Tuesday, after all. Chime right in if you want to. And, you know what, if you're bored, you can always go over to headonradionetwork.com and hit the PayPal button. We are mercifully and thankfully about $200 down the road toward November's fundraising. It would be real good if, you know, one of these months I'd like to just not sweat it all the way to the end of the month. I'd like for us all not to sweat it. But I understand that, Lord, I understand how pressed you guys are too. But if you've been thinking about it and you've never done it before, you can go hit that PayPal button at headonradionetwork.com. Because we're not kidding when we say we're America's listener-supported liberal voice. We really, really are. And what we are is the horn.
Thinking ahead means preparing for the future. The future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
It's Tuesday, November 3rd, Election Day, 2009.
Copenhagen can and must capture a result to which nations can be held accountable.
The clock is running out on the road to Copenhagen. A record fine against an oil company. Another toxic Chinese import. Plus...
Madam Chairman, this is not a ruse to prevent this committee from marking up a climate bill.
Senate Republicans offer a ruse to prevent the climate committee from marking up the climate bill.
All of that and more straight ahead from the great state of California. I'm Brad Friedman of BradBlog.com.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Prepare for 6 minutes of green news and snarky comment.
I thank God every day that I don't live in California. That state is in such a financial mess, they recently tried to burn it down for the insurance money.
Well, that's kind of true. This is your Green News Report. The Green News Report is brought to you by VelvetRevolution.us. Join the Diebold Return Our Money campaign, demanding a refund for more than $100 million taxpayer dollars spent by California alone on Diebold's failed and faulty electronic voting systems that folks are using today at the polls. Give Diebold your own 2 cents at DieboldReturnOurMoney.com. That's DieboldReturnOurMoney.com. Okay, Des? What do you have for us today?
Delegates at an international climate summit this week were greeted with 1,000 ringing alarm clocks when they arrived for negotiations in Barcelona on Monday, provided by climate activists as a literal wake-up call to take action in the final conference to find common ground before the final UN gathering in Copenhagen in early December.
Meet here behind us. We only have 5 negotiating days left before the crucial Copenhagen conference begins.
Negotiators from the European Union called on the United States to demonstrate leadership and commit to specific targets. Yesterday, the UN's climate chief ruled out reaching a comprehensive agreement in Copenhagen, but stressed a political framework must be achieved.
Are we putting too much into Copenhagen? In other words, are we putting too much anticipation that we've got to, you know, solve the climate problem in December in Copenhagen? If not, there'll be no other chance in the future?
No one believes that they will actually be able to get all the details filled in, but because these are such long lead times in these negotiations, they must have something in place which takes several years before the Kyoto Protocols run out in 2012.
I see the protocols run out. I know that a lot of environmentalists are putting a whole lot of focus on Copenhagen, and I wonder if they're bound to be disappointed.
BP, the oil company giant formerly known as British Petroleum, has been slapped with a record fine for safety violations in the deaths of 15 workers in a refinery explosion in 2005. The Occupational Health and Safety Administration, or OSHA, has fined BP a record $87 million, the largest in the agency's history, for failing in their agreement to correct hundreds of safety problems. A series of investigations after the explosion revealed that aggressive cost-cutting measures and high production pressures led to the accident, which also injured 170 people.
$87 million. That's water off BP's back. It was worth it for them.
BP spokesperson says the company will appeal the fine.
Oh, do you think?
First, it was toxic toys from China. Then it was toxic pet food. Now, owners of new homes around the country, primarily in the Southeast, are complaining that their homes are making them sick. And federal investigators now say drywall imported from China may be to blame. Homeowners say the Chinese drywall emits toxic fumes and escalating reports of corroding wires and plumbing, along with homeowner complaints of medical problems like headaches and respiratory illnesses, led Congress to order an investigation last year. Now, federal researchers from the Consumer Product Safety Commission and the Environmental Protection Agency say preliminary testing shows the Chinese drywall is indeed chemically different from domestic drywall, but they say more testing is required to establish a link. For their part, insurers have already begun denying claims to repair the damage and have dropped coverage of some homeowners who have complained their homes are toxic.
Madam Chairman, asking for an EPA analysis is not a stalling tactic.
Senate Republicans today used a stalling tactic to delay markup of landmark climate and clean energy legislation. That was Senator George Voinovich of Ohio, as Republicans on the committee boycotted the proceedings, demanding that the Environmental Protection Agency do another full five-week economic analysis on the draft version.
But that wasn't a stalling tactic. They didn't show up for the committee markup at all. They weren't there. They're saying, oh, we need to have an EPA analysis. We can't possibly talk about this after 8 years of ramming through one law after another through committee. It's unbelievable.
Senator Boxer pointed out that the EPA has already done a full, extensive analysis of the House version of the bill. The EPA combed through the Senate bill, found it nearly identical to the House bill, and concluded again that cost to households would be modest and would actually lower electricity bills.
And yet the Republicans are stalling anyway, not showing up in the committee hearings and claiming they're not stalling. Unbelievable. Read about that and much more at our website, greennews.bradblog.com, and go on over to iTunes and subscribe to the Green News Report. It's free, and it'll be downloaded to your computer anytime to listen to at your convenience. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
We know you want to save big on your phone bill, and we know how you can.
That's right. We do.
We're saving more than 50% on our home phone bill since we switched to CityNet's digital phone plan.
Really? Over 50%?
CityNet's digital phone plan is only $24.95 a month.
Only $24.95?
You get unlimited local and long-distance calling.
Just $24.95?
And with CityNet's digital phone plan, you keep your current number. All you need is a high-speed internet connection. Get details at citynet.net.
$24.95.
And, oh, this is cool. With CityNet's digital plan, I can use my home phone anywhere in the world with high-speed internet. No extra cost.
There's 20, and there's 4, and there's 95.
Did I mention CityNet is a West Virginia-owned company?
Did I mention $24.95?
Save at least 50% on your residential phone. Get unlimited local and long distance, and keep your same number, all for just $24.95 a month. Visit citynet.net today for more details. Some exclusions and restrictions may apply.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head-on with Bob Kincaid.
Yes, indeed. 17 minutes past the second hour of the program. That would be the 7 p.m. hour here on the East Coast, or the Eastern Standard Time Zone. The world is in a state of flux now because I don't know if we're back on regular time with Arizona, or I'd give up. And I'm at a complete loss as to what time it is where John Fox is. I have to go through this a couple of times a year, and by the time I figure it out, it's time to change again. But again, I do refer you to the great Native American Indian. The Indian who was asked about daylight savings time and says only a white man would think that you can cut the bottom off a blanket and put it on top of the blanket and wind up with more blanket. It's about the size of it. But at any rate, we will go straightway to the phones and see what's cooking. Hey, welcome to the program.
Well, I'll talk to you for a little while.
Okay, well, thank you.
You know me, I'm willing to believe anyone, no matter how crazy, if they confirm my bias. one of my biases.
Right.
You know, so this show works for me just fine.
That's what we are, 3 hours of bias confirmation.
Hey, no, it's like, hold on. That's right. Well, and you know, our brains work differently from normal people, don't they?
We're the normal people. That's the problem. There's not enough of us.
I don't know. Sometimes I have trouble with that, figuring out if that's just where exactly we are. But I'll tell you what we need to learn how to do. We need how to do something called naked short selling. Doesn't that sound exciting?
Sounds dirty.
Well, it is kind of dirty, but in that fun, dirty way.
Right.
Well, actually.
So, in other words, it's not naked short selling, it's naked short selling, N-E-K-K-I-D, the state of having no clothes on and being up to something?
That's right, and it's also a very profitable thing to do. Now, here's how it works, and the reason I'm bringing this up is because this kind of really sort of describes just, I mean, man, we are in the wrong business. Now, check this out. I was trying to figure out, I don't understand this crap, right? What is short selling and naked short selling and all this crap? Well, it turns out that I'm trying to just ease for me. If you short sell a stock, that means that you arrange. Again, why they allow this is because we're not in, because they made the rules and we don't. But how this basically works is I arrange, you have some stock, and you agree to loan it to me for like a week.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And I.
Pardon me. Can I borrow a cup of blue chip?
Yeah. How about let me borrow those 800 shares of General Motors? Because I just have a feeling that they're heading south. So you say okay, and I borrow those from you. And I agree to replace the 800 shares of General Motors in, say, a week. Now, the cool thing about this is that this has nothing to do with, you don't want any money. You just want your shares back. Okay?
Okay.
Now, I'm hoping that General Motors is going to tank, and lo and behold, my wishes come true. So the day I borrow your shares, I immediately dump them.
Right.
And I make $100,000. Well, maybe 4 days later, I buy back the 800 shares, and General Motors is now, I buy them back for, well, a dime.
What a racket!
Oh, God, where do you get the naked short selling? So then...
Oh, we're just at short selling? We ain't got naked yet?
Oh, man, the fun is yet to come. So, sure enough, as we agreed, here are your 800 shares of General Motors back. Here you go. And that deal is done. My work is done, and everybody's happy, and I just basically made $100,000. You didn't care about the money. You just wanted your shares back. Now let's get to naked short selling. This is incredible. And you wonder why our country is in such a mess. Okay. From what I can understand, naked short sale is exactly like the short sale, except that I don't really borrow those shares of stock from you. I just have that sink in. My cousin Larry. Well, wait a sec. Let me do this a different way. I decided to make a new rule that said I don't need to borrow the shares at all. I can just sell these shares of stock that I don't actually have. And then, well, it's kind of hard to describe, but it'll make us, it'll turn us into billionaires, evidently. You're selling a stock that you really haven't even borrowed yet. And they let you do that.
You're selling on the notion that you're gonna borrow.
But you never, they don't really require.
That you do.
That you do, that's the genius of it. So, I just, you know, and then you have these people, you know, talking to Congress and just having them with a straight face say, you know, the problem with, you know, if we have some rules and regulations that kind of, you know, control this kind of stuff is that then we won't be able to do this kind of stuff. And you know, you can see the problem with that. Oh, yeah. You know, you don't want to restrict our ability to just basically just take everyone to the cleaners whenever we want.
You know what? You know what, Reverbo?
I love this plan.
It's beautiful in its evil arcanery, but it occurs to me that W.C. Fields, who was a social philosopher far more than a comedian or a juggler or a movie maker, it occurs to me that he formulated those great laws. You know, you can't cheat an honest man. Never give a sucker an even break, and don't smarten up a chump. You know, rules to live by.
Absolutely.
He formulated those at a time when the American stock markets were behaving very similarly, and the people in those markets were behaving very similarly to the same common crooks and street punks that we're talking about today, who do things like naked short selling. And what I'm getting at by noting this is that these dodges are my God, if some kid in a street gang in L.A. tried this, they'd put him to death. But on Wall Street, it's that was a good one, Shelby.
They actually pay off on Wall Street. This isn't theoretical. This money changes hands on this.
It makes my little head hurt just thinking about it.
It just makes me depressed because it just reinforces this idea I've been working on pretty much my whole life, and that is the reason I'm not getting ahead was basically because I wasn't an asshole.
There's a lot of truth in that.
I'm sorry. It's depressing. So, okay.
Yeah, in other words, you're going through life living that whole meek shall inherit the earth and everything and all of that stuff. But the problem lies in the fact that there's no caveat in there, similar to the caveat that you were talking about last week, about just what kind of earth the meek inherit.
Well,
and it's apparently an earth that has been absolutely stripped bare.
Well, if you're set up right, if you're connected, man, you just make it up as you go along. It seems like to me. And then when they call you on the carpet, you just sit there and say, well, you don't. I mean, you know, the memory, certainly. Senator, the memory of the recent meltdown would be enough to restrict any further wild ideas like naked short selling, wouldn't you think? Yeah, that'd be good enough for me. You remember, the South does have a few heroes. You remember that Sam Irvin of those Watergate hearings, just how great he was. Just ripping these guys, ripping Haldeman and Ehrlichman. I mean, he's just relentless. That was one time I really, really, I couldn't get enough of that southern twang on that guy.
Yeah, because you knew he was coming off that way, and in a minute he was going to take one of them Harvard-educated, smarter than the rest of us types, and he was going to reach in and without the man even feeling it, he was pretty much going to reach in and pull out his liver and say, "Look here."
Oh, he was so good. Now, Mr. Haldeman, you, man, he was. Why am I talking about him? We need to get back to this. We need to get back to what we should be doing. Just okay. So, you have your cousin Larry. You get this idea. He needs a car. He's kind of looking for a car.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
You offer to sell him a car, but you don't actually have the car yet. But. The idea behind needing a car and selling a car seems to be enough, and he goes ahead and gives you the $4,000. He doesn't actually get the car, but everybody's happy. Do I have the gist of this?
It sounds like you're right on it.
Okay, how about this? You get a knock on the door, and it's like
you know what you're describing, I think? No. What you're describing is the fact that Wall Street operates on how noble this is, Reverbo. Mm-hmm. Wall Street operates on the idea of the Platonic ideal. It's not stock so much as it is stockness. That there is a form out there that embodies the very nature of what stock would be, and that's what's being traded, stockness. It's Platonic. And that's got to be good, right?
So it's transcended the actual physical realm, and it is the market. It's so transcendent, like I'm having trouble describing it, but yes, I love it. It's wonderful. Well, and you know what? It also does, of course. This isn't funny. You end up, it's called a failure to deliver. You end up overselling, like there's only so many shares of like a company stock out there. Well, suddenly there's maybe another half a million shares that don't actually exist. So you totally dilute the stock, you manipulate the price, and you further totally corrupt the entire market. But you did get that other Ferrari that you were hoping for, this time it was that bright red one.
Yeah, right.
So that's always nice. And so then they want to do, of course, they want to go back. It's called a pre-borrow rule, where you actually have to guarantee that you've got those shares.
What rule?
Pre-borrow.
I thought you said a who-borrow rule, and I was thinking we were verging into Dr. Seuss land.
But, of course, there's a lot of activity objecting to any rules that would, restrict any, their ability.
If we needed rules, we wouldn't be rich.
Well, I mean, people are just... Heck, people are sneaking into our country. It's so great over here. All I have to say. Then I read this. I'm looking up on the internet. I can't even remember what. And I run into this. Here's a scary thought. There's the notion that when things get really out of whack, out of balance, with the economy like it is now, that traditionally there would be these. What you just talked about, these Zen forces, these like marketness.
Yes.
These on high forces, market forces would kind of show up and magically adjust everything, balance everything out, get everything right again. Well, guess what? They're not working anymore.
Maybe that's because they were never real?
That has a lot to do with it.
I mean, I don't want to bust anybody's bubble or anything, but I guess this is not the time to be talking. This is probably not the time to be having an Easter Bunny conversation either, is it?
Well, it does sound like an outtake from the Milton Friedman our old Federal Reserve Chairman's one of his many discussions with Congress. Ethereal ideas here. But at any rate, where we are now, it's really scary. Is that it may be? Some people are saying that it's the whole oligarchy thing here has gone past the point of no return. That there may not be any way, short of really dramatic ways of making any adjustments. Because the lobbying and the power, the disparity of wealth and the power, that the haves are so full of it and the have-nots are so lacking in it, that nothing, there are no forces that can come into play to fix it.
And as such, nothing changes until everything changes.
Yeah. See, we really are at the... I mean, at one point I thought, okay, Obama, this is the moment, and people have said that. This is our moment now. We're teetering on the edge. It just needs to go, bing, and we can just remake capitalism, we can make gigantic changes, and Obama's maybe sitting there thinking maybe that's too much too soon now. Maybe we just want to stabilize things. So I'll bring in the boys from Wall Street to stabilize things. You know, they know the ropes. I'll bring in Guy during Summers again. Well, you know how to do this. Pump some money. And then later, a couple of years, right, second term, everybody wants to do things in their bulletproof second term. And well, we may make some big changes. And now I'm thinking I was all wet. Now I was thinking I'm, you know, they pay me to write this column, and I don't know what the hell I'm talking about.
You know,
there's nothing they can do, really.
I don't know. You probably didn't catch it, and I don't have the tab up right in front of me. But I ran across some video last night after the show of Ron Paul appearing on Larry King Live. Talking about Michael Moore and the capitalism movie. And first of all, it was Larry King, so you know that he had to interrupt Ron Paul. You know that Gloria Swanson, she was beautiful to the end. But the fact of the matter is, what Ron Paul was saying was, I'm sorry, that was just a throwaway, but I couldn't resist.
Oh, God, it reminds me, Joe Franklin always wanted to be as great as Larry King, and in his own way he was, I guess.
But at any rate, Ron Paul said, no, see, Michael Moore just doesn't understand. Michael Moore's out there making movies. Michael Moore's out there making money. Michael Moore obviously appreciates capitalism. Capitalism is not the problem. Corporatism is the problem. The free market will always succeed. And I'm sorry, I see Ron Paul, and all I can think about is his memos that were, well, you know, I don't think I wrote those memos, the ones talking about the coloreds. Those were written for me, for the newsletter that I used to put out under my name. Huh?
So that's sort of like naked short writing.
Yeah, exactly! Naked short newsletter!
Yeah. But
Ron Paul's still hanging on to this idea that the system as it is constant, that capitalism is something that can work in the 21st century. I mean, Reverbo, haven't we gotten to the point where we finally get to say, nope, this was great if you were an empire and you were bleeding your colonies dry, but it's not so good in a society that has any conceptualizations of equality or freedom. I mean, can we finally say that?
I thought that's what Obama sort of was saying. But yes, it needs a bit of an overhaul. Of course, it does. I don't know. For a minute there, Paul, I was thinking, Ron, you're good. You're right there. Yes, it is. It is corporatism is really more of a problem than capitalism. But then, of course.
But then you realize that if he got his way, we'd be up to our necks in neo-psycho-Randianism.
Well, yeah, he really does want the only people to.
I mean, anybody who names his kid after that woman's last name wouldn't trust him with the carcass of a dead skunk.
I'm sorry, what's the name?
Ron Paul's son, the one running for Congress in Kentucky?
Yeah, and what would his first name be?
Rand?
No.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
Rand Paul.
Give yourself a dinger.
This one's for you. Oh, my. Well, yeah, I mean, these guys, they really do believe that we shouldn't pay for potholes unless we're running over them. I shouldn't pay for the pothole on your street. I mean, these guys are just strict libertarians, I believe.
Yeah, and nobody needs health care. You know, if you're dying, if you're one of the 45,000 Americans who die every year
not because of the disease you have, but because you've got something and you can't get to the doctor. If you're one of those 45,000, you needed to die.
It's called culling the herd, isn't it?
Yeah, and I think there's another fancy word for it that doesn't get a lot of positive airplay anymore. It's called eugenics.
Oh, that is what it's called. Well, people don't like to go there.
No, because there was a little guy with a chaplain mustache, and, well...
Yeah, it's better to just say, go die.
And die quickly. Go die and die quickly.
I think it's even more compelling now that we start a that the horns start a subversive a subsection that we call where we go back and call us friends of death like we were thinking, because I think it's going to be huge. I mean, we're, you know, when we answer the phone, we're all smiles and chuckles.
Yeah, but right.
Here's what this guy says. The unequal accumulation of political resources points to an ominous possibility. Political inequalities may be ratcheted up, so to speak, to a level from which they cannot be ratcheted down. The cumulative advantages in power, influence, and authority of the more privileged strata may become so great that even if less privileged Americans compose a majority of citizens, they are simply unable and perhaps even unwilling to make the effort it would require to overcome the forces of inequality arrayed against them.
That's kind of the street we live on, isn't it?
Mm.
I mean, you know, I started out the program and everything tonight talking about the fact that, you know, it's November 3rd. Do you know where your political party is? Because... When I looked up and realized, oh my God, we are now officially a year from the midterm elections. You know, that's gonna make for great, you know, for the political junkies, and I am one more or less. It's gonna be great because there's gonna be plenty to talk about. But that's only because we don't talk about the realities like what you just described in that passage. The realities are that until we get a House of Representatives that is wall-to-wall Alan Grayson and Dennis Kucinich, and a couple of others, ain't nothing much going to happen.
I don't know what they're waiting for. Everything's pretty much lined up right now. There's no gray area in any of it left. It's pretty black and white the way I look at it. I mean, you always wish for like the third and fourth and fifth political party. You know, like to have on Italy where you're like a porno party. You can have like Chichi Alina to be your senator or something like this. You said that would make it more interesting, but does it really make it any better?
I would submit to you that the answer is no.
Yeah, it doesn't seem like they're a mess over there.
And there's real political science, high-minded PhD kind of thinking that goes into these questions. You know, you and I, we're just groundlings. But the question is, what is the political model for what was called when I was a kid the space age? What is that? Because is it a failure of democracy? Well, not really, because we don't have one. You know, if we had a democracy, it would mean that, you know, I might not be able to do a show on Thursday nights, because I would have to be down at the local town hall meeting every Thursday night, because I would be part of the local democracy, and you dare not show up.
Well,
or you dare not show up.
We fixed that by changing it to a republic, so you don't have to do that.
Right. So, you know, in terms of ancient history, the Athenians came up with the idea of democracy, and then the Romans come along and they go, you know, that looks pretty good, sort of, but that looks like it could get out of hand. That's a little messy.
Well, Yeah, not enough free time.
And so they came up with this idea of the Senate, which was comprised of the people with the real Jed Clampett walking around money. And then there were the plebs, which was you and me. And they had a tribune of the plebs, who was supposed to look out for the well-being of the working stiffs. And so, you know, when they would have elections, you know, for praetor and tribune and this, that, and the other thing. And even though we think about ancient Rome as being about as civilized as you could get back then, the fact of the matter was they were comprised of tribes. So they gathered together out on the, was it the Campus Martius? And imagine a whole bunch of, you know the little rope line you have to go through to order your burger at Wendy's?
Mm-hmm.
Imagine a whole bunch of those for all the tribes. And you went through, and based upon how much you had been paid by some individual running for, consul, you went and cast your vote. Because they really didn't get around to noticing the fact that bribery would really squirrel the process. And thus was born what was the idea of the Republic. And the idea of the representative democracy.
It's a time saver, and it's still democratic. I like it. And I think that the bribery, I think that just sort of enhances the process.
And then you get it over here, and the one thing that the framers of the Constitution knew was that they didn't want the plebs getting all uppity and thinking that they were going to directly control the government. So they created a House of Representatives that would be directly voted for by the plebs, and then the Senate would be selected by the state governments. And then nobody but the absolute honest-to-goodness people who could be trusted with that kind of discretion, nobody but that would form the Electoral College and select the president. All while giving the plebs the overall, and bear in mind, the plebs were only defined as white landowners.
Mm-hmm.
All the while giving the plebs the notion that they were, at least at a distance, selecting the chief magistrate. So I've gotten to the point every time I hear some godforsaken repiglic in Reverbo talk about how, well, you know, we stand for principles of freedom and democracy, and we're going to show them some of that democracy over there in Afghanistan. You know, it's Elvis Gunn, peanut butter and banana sandwich time. Bang. Another dead TV. Because the fact of the matter, do you remember when we first took down Afghanistan and we were first propping up the filthy, dirty Karzai government, and all the talking heads in the flickering blue light got a shiny new word from Afghanistan for all our blood and treasure? That's right, they were going to hold a Loya Jirga. That just sounds sexy, doesn't it?
Damn, you remember everything.
And this Loya Jirga, it turns out, is one of those is a tribal meeting where the heads of all the clans come together. That's clan with a C, not a K.
Mm-hmm.
And they pick their leader. And I'll be damned if it doesn't sound like what? Yeah, representative democracy. But we were taking democracy to them when they'd had it laying there gathering dust for the last 5,000 years. Makes me nuts. Makes me look crazy.
I think that maybe the point to notice here is that the vision of the space age, of space age culture, maybe sort of forward into the past, that maybe what people really want to be are tribal.
maybe what people really are is tribal.
Because somewhere there's a disconnect, because it sure doesn't look like that anybody in the Middle East is interested in our way, our culture, our political or cultural trappings. They much prefer what they have, and they will never be interested in what we have. And yet you've just demonstrated that we're closer than we think. But somebody here ought to get, we need a new strategy over there, because it sounds like if we would quit getting engaged in these foreign intrigues, you know, like it was still 1940, maybe we would accomplish, maybe actually get somewhere.
Or maybe, maybe they're not interested in what we're selling, because what we're selling is, go into the marketing world. Maybe what we're selling, Reverbo, is a tainted brand. Let's say you're running a meat company, and part of your marketing includes having on the box, "Now flavored with poo." It's not going to sell.
No.
It's going to be, it's not just tainted meat, it's a tainted brand. And the American brand is tainted. Because what we call democracy, they call massacres. What we call pacification, they call hellfire missiles on a wedding party. Not yelling at you, mind you.
I know. You're coming in like one of them hellfire missiles, but that is the problem. Well, why don't we?
You know, people. You know,
who's got any brains to change this? Maybe it isn't the strategy; it's the tactics. Will somebody please change the tactics?
The Israeli lobby recently had a full-on purple polka-dotted blue screaming hissy and kittens with crocheted tails because a guy from Palestine, a Palestinian, who is involved in the non-violence movement. Something that how the Palestinian occupied territories have desperately needed for a long, long time. You know, somebody who's emulating that whole Gandhi gig. The Israeli lobby had an absolute hissy because this guy was on The Daily Show. For the first time in the 12-year history of The Daily Show, people heckled from the audience. I mean, it really was kind of a milestone. But you know what? That guy wants a government and a country of his own, and why the hell should he want the American model of so-called democracy where you have to spend all your blood and treasure building stuff to blow up other people? He's got people who need electricity, clean running water, and food.
Why indeed?
So, you know, I think it boils down.
I thought in our country, I thought civilians run the. I thought we. I didn't think the generals made policy. Do we have? Are there no civilians? I'm going to answer it. It's a rhetorical question. Never mind. There are plenty of people who know what to do, and they don't seem to be getting heard. We'll see what he does. He is taking his time. We know one thing about Obama. He's not stupid. He is certainly listening. Hopefully he's speaking to everyone. My friend who knows some about this says that what's happening in Afghanistan, we're just missing the whole point. They don't want to be, they don't want the Taliban over there any more than we do. They've got more cell phones. In 4 years, they're watching Afghanis with the Stars. They want to be on that show. These people are already... You know, if we would just try to figure out a way to connect word I'm looking for here.
I'm looking for it with you. It's right there next to my contact.
I can't find it, but that's where they're going. It's funny, they're all going where we want them to go. We're just not helping them get there. We're actually...
But the thing is, let me redirect this for just a minute, Reverbo. We don't want them to have a democracy.
That's what we say we want them to have. We want them to have a corporatocracy. Remember, Hamid Karzai's last job before he became Grand Exalted 32nd Noble Turk in or whatever it is he is in Afghanistan, the job he had before that was being an acquisitions guy for Unocal, for Christ's sakes.
Oh, fine. Now you're just going to pour cold water over the whole thing, aren't you? Just like you always do. Now you're, the next thing I know, you're going
to... I'm in the cold water business.
Next thing I know, it's going to be, yeah, we always do this. Just, yeah, we did this in Vietnam. We did this with the Shah of Iran. We always...
And we failed! And we keep failing! We keep trying to set up corporatocracies! And naturally, the people look up and go, holy crap, we don't want that! We'd rather... better red than dead!
Yeah, we can't do anything right, can we? Well, why don't we just quit trying and just forget the whole damn thing?
Sometimes that's what you do. Sometimes the Zen master comes along and whacks you on the back of your head while you are arranging your Zen gravel garden and sends you off to wash your rice bowls. And we've got some serious rice bowls to be washed.
I was wondering when you were going to crack.
Guess I done did.
Well,
you're the one that started it with the naked short selling. Don't blame me.
I can't. That's too bold for me. I can do the naked short writing, though.
You know, you want to fix America? And see, that's the other thing, Reverbo. That's the other thing. There's no guarantee that because it's a democracy, it gets it right. A democracy ordered the death of Socrates. And Plato held it again. Why do you think he wrote the Republic? He wrote the Republic because he hated the Athenian democracy and was trying to come up with a different model. Because the Athenian democracy killed the single noblest, best, justest man he had ever known. Literally the love of his life. And frankly, the Athenian democracy would go on to immolate itself in a stupid war of choice against Sparta. Because it thought that it was the BSD of the Mediterranean. And it wound up breaking itself financially, morally, spiritually, ethically, on the rocks of what was back then the closest thing we ever saw to fascism. And it wound up being turned into that that it hated most. Welcome to us, the U.S.
Well, yes, yeah, the end of the line. I don't know how do you remake it now. How do you close for remodeling? This is what I wanted to do. You notice, I wanted to make two enormous signs. I want to stick one on the beach in North Carolina, where I live, and I want to stick one. Well, where should we stick that other one? We'll stick that other one in Laguna Beach, and it just says closed for repairs.
Yeah. And meantime, and I don't think you'd have to amend the Constitution to pull this little trick off. Ultimately, it is the disconnect between the plebs and the idea of government that creates most of the problems. And so, you know, whatever, if you go back and you consider, wow, have you taken me down the garden path? If you go back and you consider the idea of the pure Athenian democracy, you know, pure insofar as it did not take in women, it did not take in slaves, it did not take in non-property holders, but the pure Athenian democracy where everyone participated who was anybody. You know, frequently modeled, frequently seen still in some vogue in corners of New England. Town hall meeting?
Mm-hmm.
The only way that democracy, nobody ever envisioned democracy operating among 300 million people. And I think that's one of the things that bothered the framers, and I'm just guessing. There's nothing I don't think there's anything in the Federalist Papers to suggest this. But one of the things that was bothersome to the framers as much as anything else was the fact that they were already far-flung. Transportation took forever. You know, just ask Thomas Jefferson, who had to keep riding back and forth from Charlottesville to Philadelphia. Hell, it's no fun to drive it. Can you imagine that on a horse? But anyway, it was already far-flung out toward, you know, we were moving out toward the Mississippi River, out, you know, we were, Kentucky was being carved out of Virginia, and blah, 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 blah. And they realized that they had a tiger by the tail, and they didn't know how to govern it. And that's what the whole Federalist Papers is about. You know, it's how are we going to, you know, keep this from descending into utter and abject chaos? And the fact of the matter is, attempt one failed because it headed toward chaos, the Articles of Confederation.
Yes, yeah, too much, essentially because it gave the states, it didn't have enough centralized power.
Right, there was nobody to say no. So, you know, attempt number two more or less worked, but God knows it took a lot of tweaking along the way. But when I say, you know, how do we do democracy for the space age? We take into account the fact that we can get from point A to point B with relative speed. And what you, and wow, this is like really high-minded stuff that I have no business, I'm out of my depth badly. But you start on the lowest, smallest level that you can manage. Whether it's your condo association or your neighborhood watch, you know, there's democracy happening there because everybody has an equal say and everybody has an equal voice. And you operate on a consensus model. And those people elect a representative who goes to the larger body that operates on the same model, and they elect a representative who goes to the larger model until you're up at the House of Representatives and the Senate. And then I think it begins to work. Because then people have a stake in it beyond simply being a matter of, you know, what you do every 2 years in between watching horse race coverage on the cable news channels.
How do you avoid corruption in that model? How do you avoid?
Well, I don't think you avoid corruption in any political model.
I mean, how would you lessen the chance of politics for sale in that model?
Well, but the thing is, every time when the smaller body sends its representative to the next larger body, the representative's hands are tied. He does the consensus bidding of the smaller body. Or she does the consensus bidding. And you know what? There are lots of people out there who don't work regular hours or work different hours, but will be serious enough about it that will say, hey, listen, send your proxy, signed, notarized, sworn to proxy by someone you trust who's going to be there. Because non-participation is not an option. And so the issues of the big pothole at the corner of Shade and Maple gets directly dealt with. And the 18-year-old kid who can't get a job except to go into the military and go get blown up in some foreign country, that issue gets dealt with, and maybe you start having something like that American World Service Corps that our buddy Dwayne Hunn talked about a few weeks ago. And you find you're constantly searching for a new way forward. Because one of the fundamental problems with any governmental form, I think, is the fact that as soon as it's established, it wants to perpetuate itself. You know, remember, the Constitution was framed and written and drafted and voted on and all of that by a bunch of guys who had just gotten done committing treason against the crown. Right?
Right.
And so what's the only crime that they define in the Constitution?
I'm guessing is it treason?
Treason against the government of the United States. Treason is the only crime that finds its way into the Constitution of the United States, and yet, he wasn't in the Constitutional Committee. There was Thomas Jefferson, who now is famously quoted by the teabaggers, with all this business about the Tree of Liberty needing to be watered from time to time with the blood of the tyrants and noble men, or tyrants and patriots, or whatever. They're incompatible. So, you know, that's some, but we've got to have serious, or maybe we don't,
We've got to have serious considerations and serious discussions about how we govern ourselves. Because one of the things that has happened is that in many ways it seems that we have outgrown our ability to govern ourselves, and we have indirectly proxied it to the corporations of this country.
Yeah.
And they're not exercising the proxies that we default gave them in our best interest. They're using it in their best interest because the law is set up in such a way that the only thing a corporation is allowed to do is act in its own best interest.
We have to restore some kind of way. We have to compel them to do what we send them there to do. And we've given that away.
Yeah. And I don't know if it can happen in the current framework. You know, please remember that every urge toward change in government has come from somebody who has looked up and said, you know, what we got now ain't working.
God, you'd rolled it back to the very first, you know, when you make an outline. I can't remember the last time I made an outline. It was probably in the sixth grade.
I usually wrote the paper first and then bogarted the outline out of the paper. I can't make outlines.
But some people go, you know, you can say, well, let's just reduce this to the essential point. Well, the essential point is we have to change the way elections are funded. And some people go, you know, some people go, no, that's not the problem. We have to, this, that, or the other thing. Well, you've gone to the very top of the outline. You've got to just change the entire structure of it.